This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Every weekday, we talk with public officials, business and education leaders, nonprofit organizations, and more about the issues of the day as we work hard to help you stay connected with local news and information. Now, here's Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here in the Umpqua Valley. Today is essentially going to be a science class, so you can put on your thinking caps, and we're going to talk about forest bridges with Treasurer and former Executive Director Denise Barrett and co-founder and board member Rick Sohn. Guys, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So, as we unveiled today in a story, you have a management alternative which you've submitted to the Bureau of Land Management for the Western Oregon BLM lands. Tell us more about it.
Sure. Back at, I think it was February 19th, the Bureau of Land Management came out in the Federal Register with a notice of intent to revise their resource management plans and environmental impact statement for Western Oregon lands, including, well, basically BLM lands, ONC lands, Coos Bay Wagon Road lands, roughly 2.46 million acres. And ultimately, they're revising the 2016 resource management plans. And we can say more about our alternative, but maybe let Rick have a chance to say something.
Well, I noticed from your alternative, you propose a much lower harvest level than the BLMs. What did you see differently in the science of this?
Well, we approached this from the concepts of what we thought management should be based on the collaborators and everyone that we had worked with, as well as the science. And our focus, we haven't really calculated an actual estimated output until very recently. And honestly, the 675 million feet we came up with is three times as high as the current plan has been. And we just felt that it was the right approach because we're trying to sustain the forests. We're trying to manage density.
And you come from a timber background, as a lot of people know. Talk about what you've done kind of over the course of your life and why you're still so interested in this.
Well, for me, forest bridges represented an opportunity to give back. We, through our family business, Lone Rock and Sun Studs, benefited greatly from timber sales that were offered by the BLM. And once that program came to a halt, folks like myself who have strong forest biology and ecology type background and soils background look at that and say, are we doing the right things out there? And no, we're not. And what we've learned now, tribes lived on these lands. The whole notion of leaving lands untouched caused the densities of forest to go up. It caused the amount of dead to go up. And now we have fires. It should be no surprise. So that's kind of how my background influences that.
And Denise, you've got a lot of different people involved in your organization that all kind of come from a different starting point, I would say.
Yeah, we're lucky. We have, you know, members of the conservation community, timber, the tribes. We engage with governments at all levels. We also have a robust set of advisors, again, with diverse backgrounds, and a whole group of independent scientists and what we call eco-cultural reviewers, so that all the science that we are consuming and synthesizing and deciding how it really plays out, again, but in alignment with our principles of agreement. So we're moving with a collaborative. You know, not everybody can do that, but we have really excelled at being able to bring people to the table that can agree on our different approaches.
So for this management alternative, how many people were involved in contributing to it?
Well, we this is a, if you look at our whole of our papers in bringing us to this place where we can derive an alternative, it's hundreds of people. And you know, I always say, look at the references, and you'll see, you know, 25 pages in our dry force paper, and 20 pages of references in our moist force paper. And in this paper, basically, we went out to all of our key advisors and scientists. We only had 30 days. You know, some of it was challenging, but you know, the moment had arrived where we could actually launch off of our papers.
I guess I would add to that people that we interacted with directly got to be somewhere between 50 and 100 over the time period that we're actually having substantive conversations with. And one of the hallmarks of our work is that politically we are able to approach all different viewpoints and be heard and have people talk to us.
Is that hard for you, or was it hard when the process began, coming from such a timber-focused background?
Well, that's a very interesting question. And when we started this process, it was hard for me. And one of the things I found with the other collaborators in the room was that I was wrong about 50% of the time when I thought something was right. But over time, you learn, and of course our viewpoint and image of what the forest is going to be sort of changes, and begin to see, to transition from the pure timber perspective, which of course in some respects I still hold, but now I have this understanding of the federal forest management and how maybe that should be different.
So Denise, talk about the tribal or the indigenous kind of input to this.
Sure, it's integral to our scientific and let's say consensus science approach. We include the tribal science and their practice, indigenous knowledge. It would be a lot involved in sort of the use of beneficial or prescribed fire, carefully applied. And you know, the checkerboard is mixed ownerships, and so we came up with strategies that really apply prescribed fire together with our thinning strategies. They can work complementary, and you know, we promote that the indigenous tribes should be not only in co-management, but should be leading on methods in which they have the expertise.
And do you feel like that idea is being heard by the federal level?
Yeah, I think it's definitely embraced more and more. You can see it in their literature. You can see it in, you know, when they're coming out with their plans. The Northwest Forest Plan, of course, is still going on. There was a lot more seats at the table for tribal representatives. And as, you know, in the cooperator organization level, you've got governments, traditional governments, American governments, but you also have tribal governments that are also able to sit at the table and contribute. But our vision is really that they should be integral in the co-management and then, as I said, leading where they can best apply some of their expertise.
And I know in one of our other conversations, one of your prior documents really went super in-depth in a way I hadn't heard before, because you broke it down, for instance, into dry forests and moist and transitional forests. Talk about all that and why that's important.
Go ahead, Rick.
Okay, sure. The transitional forest is something that when we went out on a field trip with the BLM, they'd said, yeah, we've got all this land that's kind of in the middle. And dry forests are the kinds of things you find in the Medford, Grants Pass, Ashland area. And moist forests are the kinds of thing you find when you're out in the Coast Range. And we all recognize that they're very different. But the transitional forest is an area where on one side of the hill, you'll have a dry forest. And on the other side of the hill, the north side generally, you'll have a moist forest. And the problem is that in the summer, they all dry out. And everything in those transitional forests is just about as susceptible to fire as everything in the dry forest. So you got to pay attention to how you're managing these forests in, say, Lane and Douglas County that are a lot of transitional forest area, because and going up the Willamette Valley and down into the Rogue and everywhere else, these transitional forests are very susceptible to fire, and the density's got to be managed there appropriately.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to take a break, talk more about this in a moment on Inside Douglas County. Rick Sohn and Denise Barrett from Forest Bridges. The interview a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com and 1245 at News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248. Lars Larson coming at 1. We are talking about Forest Bridges and their management proposal for Western Oregon BLM lands. Denise Barrett and Rick Sohn in with us from the organization. Rick, we were talking some science earlier, but as things evolve in this whole conversation on timber management, politics has got to be a big factor.
Yes, it does. And it's very interesting that the Trump administration is actually what offered Forest Bridges the opening to provide the alternative that we had, because they went from a practical level of about 20% of the forest being managed to about 77% of the forest being managed actively for timber and habitat and everything else, although the ONC Act is particularly oriented toward sustained yield. Well, Forest Bridges has a very finely developed proposal, very fine-tuned, I should say. And the idea is that if you do a lot of the things right and you do it for the right reasons, you can come out with a plan that's sustainable for the forest, but also, we think, durable politically. And while it's the Trump administration that gave us the opening, we want to apply that opportunity to a plan that will serve well in the long term.
Because in a few years, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, right, you're going to have a different president who may have a different idea.
Yeah, and we've always been in the solutions generation to transcend the political paradigms, the political swinging pendulum that we think is just not going to get us anywhere. It's just going to keep waiting for more resistance one way or the other, and we really want solutions. And so that's why our proposal is so important. Now, I did want to add that it's a very tight timeline for this planning process, this planning revision process. We're expecting the BLM to come out with a draft plan and environmental impact statement in June. This is only a couple of months away. So and then by the end of the year, November, they'll be coming out with their final, and then there's the whole other processes that have to unfold for it to be approved by the governor, and then as a record of decision federally. We want the public to know that, and we'd like the public support and even our congressional delegation support behind us, because it could be that they've already decided what the alternative is, and maybe they're not. They had 90,000 comments, by the way, already. Substantive comments like ours, we would imagine, are few and far between, just because of all the level of detail that we put into our proposal. But we really would like to see multiple alternatives in that final or that draft proposal coming out in June.
Do you feel like, I mean, realistically, did somebody actually read all 90,000 of these?
Well, we know that they're processing it. They have a reason to do that. You know, who knows? Maybe they're using AI right now, a tool to help them to process through it and find out what the key words are, what the key concepts are. But they do due diligence. We know that. We've had multiple experiences working in this planning area and have had some success, actually, as well, getting for the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument Plan. We had success in getting the BLM to model and incorporate some of our proposal.
So what kind of response have you gotten from what you've put out?
Well, so far, we know that the BLM has received our comments.
Yeah, and we met with the BLM a couple of weeks ago to introduce ourselves and to talk about our proposal, and they said that they were looking forward to being able to look at it, review it.
Now, was that locally, or where were you doing that?
We went to the state level. We met with the acting BLM director, Kim Prill, and her senior staff. and had a very cordial, more than an hour conversation with her, which was encouraging to us. And at that point, Kyle, we hadn't finished our proposal. We were still working on it, but obviously we had our groundwork and all of our science papers and our principles of agreement ready to go to sort of, how do we adapt it into the land base that's available and under the purpose and need of the notice of intent.
So how does the process with BLM work? I mean, they're going to put out something, but are they mandated to respond to what you put out or not?
They do a synthesis of the public comments, and that is their main response. So we may or may not see, typically they're not going to name names in that particular first phase of acknowledging receipt of comments. But what we saw with the Kaskaskia National Monument and what we'd hope to see in this instance is that, did our alternative actually become a standalone alternative? Or was it somehow integrated into the alternatives that they finally put out in that draft? I'm pretty sure that, our name will be there. It was in the Kaskaskia National Monument process. They named Forest Bridges, and they said what they could and couldn't do with what we had submitted. We've learned a lot since that time.
So, Rick, when the BLM put their proposal out to go to this higher level, were you surprised at all?
I was surprised that they laid down the parameters that they laid down, but was also really pleasantly surprised that they gave Forest Bridges such an opening that would otherwise require legislation to get. The notion of 77% of the land base being available for timber is so far beyond what we imagined, and yet for us, we're trying to practice forestry without land use allocations. We're trying to practice forestry where you set exact limits and specifications on what can be harvested. And we want to do that on as much of the land base as possible so the BLM has the flexibility and our limits and specifications keep them from over-harvesting.
Now, do you feel like with this plan, whatever they ultimately decide, that this has got the potential to, as one article said, reignite the timber wars?
Well, I think you can already see in the background, if you're like us reading and listening to the media and hearing feedback from others in our circle, that, it's getting people quite nervous and different areas. And this is the message, we really want people to take note of what we're trying to achieve here. And instead of running in one direction, try to sort of come in to the table and see what we actually are offering, because we think that we have a strong, durable proposal.
About a minute and a half left on Inside Douglas County. Other things people should know about this proposal?
Well, first and foremost, we'd love it if the public would send an email to the BLM. And I wanted to give the BLM an email. I hope they don't mind. But it's BLM_OR_revision_scoping@BLM.gov. So if you want to talk to us, too, you can get a hold of us at info@forestbridges.org if you have more conversations you'd like to have. But we'd really like the public to get behind us to actually include our alternative in the plan. The other thing that I wanted to say, which Rick was alluding to, too, is that, we're very much in terms of our sustainable healthy forests and habitats. For each of the types of forest, our collaborative came up with specific goals. And, wildfire mitigation is one of the strongest parts of our dry forest because of the high level of high severity goal. With legacy or old growth, still building legacy and old growth forests. And in the moist forest, we take a different approach, which is based on structural complexity of old growth, trying to move it from 25% its current level up to 50%, whilst also mitigating wildfire where it needs to be mitigated.
All right. Well, we are out of time for now. We could talk for quite a while on this. Really quick, give people your website address.
Yeah, forestbridges.org. You can easily plug that into a search engine, forestbridges.org, or send us an email at info@forestbridges.org.
Rick Stone, Denise Barrett, thanks for being in.
Thanks for having us, Kyle.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This has been Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Listen every weekday afternoon at 12:30 to stay connected with what's happening in your community. Today's interview will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it with others and let them know where they can hear it. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.